Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
My name is Pat Iyer, and this is Legal Nurse Podcast. Welcome back to a new episode of our show. You will have an opportunity in this show to get to know Ethel Wills, who has been a legal nurse consultant since 2016. She has a varied clinical background, including acute care, intensive care, burns, trauma, outpatient, and home health, and long-term care. Ethel officially opened the doors of her business in 2016, and her business has grown steadily since she opened up her business. She provides expert reviews, expert analysis of rehab and long-term care cases, and is expanding her business to include cost projections and life care planning. Ethel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What we wanted to do in this conversation is to focus on an area that can lead to a lot of litigation in nursing home cases. In the, I guess it was would be in the 2000s, I was the editor of a book on nursing home litigation and assembled authors on various topics to deal with some of the common reasons why cases are filed involving the care that residents receive. Dehydration and malnutrition were two of the issues that I saw repeatedly coming up, and we're focusing on those topics in this podcast. Ethel, we know that nutrition is important for us in all phases of our life. Why are the elderly particularly vulnerable for problems with nutrition and hydration?
The elderly, because of their comorbidities, their frailties, those are all possibilities is why they are. A long, healthy life is desired by all. And the longer we live, there's a chance that we will become ill and have a more apt to being sick and develop more illnesses, which makes us frail and more dependent. Those are some of the reasons that they can become. And one of the things that an elderly person is more susceptible to a falls if one is fatigued from being frail and not having good food intake, there's a possibility of being having falls, weakness, those types of things. And this makes them more vulnerable.
I think you're bringing up something that is important for us to consider as legal nurse consultants, is that the attorney may come to us because of a case involving a fall, but the fall itself was the end result of a person becoming progressively more malnourished, dehydrated, and those factors and changes could result in that fall.
That's correct. It can. And then if a legal nurse consultant has that complaint brought before her from the attorney, they should look in the medical records for all those factors, whether or not that person was assessed for their ability to eat, how strong they were, their mobility factors, and whether or not they had a good food intake. The weakness that's caused by the lack of food can make one more prone to falls. Weaknesses, those types of things.
So the case that is presented to the legal nurse consultant as a fall case, where the focus might be on liability related to how the fall occurred, is only, from what I'm hearing from you, that's only the surface of the problem. It's what's beneath that, what caused that fall, that requires the LNC to be more analytical in the approach of evaluating the medical records.
Oh, yes, by all means, it is. There are so many factors that can contribute to a fall, and nutrition is only one of them. And so when that nurse, the legal nurse consultant gets that case, she needs to really dig deep, dig into that medical records and look at the possibilities. What, if anything, led to the person that fall? As I said, nutrition is one. Look into whether or not that person was assessed for poor nutrition. There are so many ways that can be done. And that's one of the first things to look at, because nutrition can cause weakness and fatigue, leaving that person less apt to be able to fend for themselves, less apt to move, that type of thing.
Can you take us into the nursing home environment when it's mealtime? For people who are working in acute care, we have a vision of a truck coming around and trays being distributed and people being propped up in bed and somebody helping them with getting their utensils out and the lids off the food. But is that the same environment in a nursing home? And if not, how does the nursing home environment get structured to help ensure that people are getting enough food and enough to drink?
As you said, that's not the way it's really, that's not the real world. There's not a food tray passing the food around. The nursing home is like a home environment. There's every effort is being done to create a home atmosphere. There's usually a community dining room. Then that person is each, all that can go to the dining area is usually walked. If they cannot go down, use assisted to the dining area to a seating space. If they cannot, then of course it's in the room and a tray is taken to the room at that point. But in the other time, it's actually in a home-like dining area with other people, encouraging the resident to engage, interact with the others at the table.
If somebody has to be fed, how is that handled in the dining room?
Usually there's a CNA, a certified nursing assistant, that will assist that person in feeding. I would like to circle back to the malnutrition piece with that. Sometimes there are degenerative diseases such as Parkinson's that may affect one's ability to eat. Unfortunately, so many things that can, but with Parkinson's, there's the hand tremors, and so there's a gradual loss, I should say, of maybe the finger dexterity, and so they need assistance with feeding, and there's someone there to use to help to assist. And if the LNC is actually evaluating that medical records for issues, that's one of the things they will look at, whether or not that person's assessed for their ability to eat on their own. And if not, what kind of assistance was documented as provided. And I'd like to also say the CNA is one that's responsible for recording the meal intake. And if the LNC, again, is concerned about nutrition intake, malnutrition, they will look at the percentage of food intake that's was recorded by the CNA.
And how accurate are those records, Ethel?
Unfortunately, they cannot all the time, they're not accurate. A responsibility that I always look for too is whether or not, and therefore myself, when I was actually working in the environment, I would of course take a walk down into the dining room. But one of the things that most nursing homes require is a nurse to be in the dining room when the patients are being fed, or the residents being fed, so they can be available in the event there is an emergency. If I'm not that nurse, I will usually walk down to ensure that there's someone that's actually assisting that resident was because sometimes there's not an accurate documentation. I had a case a few months ago where the every intake recorded was 100%, 100%, 100%, but yet the person lost so much weight, and there was no comorbidities, I should say, that should have led to that. So of course that was a mismatch. And one of the things that you're looking for is the nutrition assessment. The nutrition person had, the dietary person did the assessment, the nutritionist rather, she had assessed the need and assessed what the percentage of protein, fluids this person was needed, but she did not go back to reassess after the weight loss. And there was still this documentation by the CNAs, this 100%, but yet there was a weight loss. And one of the things that we look for, you want as a legal nurse consultant, is to look at the percentage of weight loss documented. A significant weight loss is greater than 5% in a month. And this person had much more than that. So you really want to really dig into those records and really dig deep to see just what is what's being recorded. Because oftentimes there's a mismatch. If the CNS record 100% and yet the person's lost 10 pounds in a month, there's definitely something's wrong there. You need to look further.
And that raises the question about family members coming in to help feed and how that source of support disappeared when nursing homes went into quarantine measures. Have you seen yet cases where there was significant weight loss and malnutrition during the time when family members were barred from coming in to help feed their loved one?
Yes, most definitely I have seen it happen as well. That's unfortunately that did happen, it has happened. There's the support is needed. Staffing, unfortunately, is an issue and has been for a long time in nursing home facilities, and it's even greater problem now with COVID. And there is still an unanswered solution as to how that's to be addressed. But yes, I have seen weight loss with that. Families were a great help, and it was needed. And of course, what I've seen is that residents are more likely to eat if they're being fed by someone they know, that there's that memory, there's that connection, and usually they would eat a great deal more if that person is their family.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you mentioned that I wanted to comment on was the importance of having supervision in the dining room. You mentioned a registered nurse who would be there. I worked on a case with a man who was cognitively impaired, who was on a soft diet, and he grabbed a sandwich off of his neighbor's tray or meal place. It was a deli sandwich, and he stuffed the sandwich in his throat, and there was no person in his immediate vicinity. There was no aides, there were no nurses in the dining room at the time that he did this. So he ended up choking to death on this sandwich. And the rescue squad came in after the staff called for help. They first took him to his room while he was dead, and then got him up on the bed and did CPR. And the rescue squad person took a long forceps and pulled out this curled piece of ham from the back of his throat, which they put in a plastic bag, and they sent the ham and the nursing home resident to the ER, where he was pronounced dead. The nursing home's defense was, oh, it wasn't a piece of ham. It was strawberry Ensure that was curdled. And somewhere along the way, they lost the ham. The plastic bag got thrown out. The critical evidence in the case was discarded. And the plaintiff won that case. I wondered if you could comment on what I shared with you in terms of the facts of that case and the supervision that's needed when people are eating.
Oh, yes, supervision is most definitely needed because there's a possibility of a lot of things like that happening, as well as you want to make sure that the person, that the CNA is actually doing the feeding of the individual as well. With the case that you mentioned there, are there patients that want to eat if there's a problem swallowing? That sometimes they don't realize they cannot. There's a desire for food, but the memory, the mental capacity is not there to recognize that, hey, I can't have it. They may have been demented, have Alzheimer's or dementia, and don't realize, hey, I see this and I like it, and it's something that looks appealing, but yet I cannot eat it. So that's a real possibility for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that supervision is, I will look at the care plan for sure. The one thing to look at is whether or not the care plan is there any documentation on the, there was a person care plan for supervision? Was the care plan be fed? And what's the policy of the facility? There should be a policy in place that says chaperone in the dining areas. If that's not, that's one particular thing would help win that case. Was there not? What did the policy say?
Policy said that the residents were not supposed to be left unattended.
Exactly. And that's what I will look at, the policy and follow that. That would be a very pertinent fact helping support in that case is the lack of the facility to follow that policy and procedures.
Well, let's now take the situation that the nursing home resident is transported to the emergency department for whatever reason. Suppose the resident has fallen and the emergency department does lab work to assess the nutritional and fluid status of the resident. The LNC finds those results in the chart. What are some of the tests that we should be looking at in the medical record that would help determine if the resident came in a state of dehydration or malnutrition? Before we continue with the show, I'd like to share this special announcement with you.
Hey everyone, my name is Jill Lublin and I am super excited to see you at the conference. There, I'm going to deliver to you easy to use steps to get your name out there to create guerrilla publicity so that you're well-known, well-respected, and that you're congruent with your message. We're going to give you simple visibility-building activities that you can do quickly and low-cost, and items that you can use to stretch people to understand what you do so that your message gets out. Because your message matters. I believe that. I know it. And I'm looking forward to supporting you to get it done at the conference. I'll see you there. Bye-bye.
Now let's return to the show.
Forrest, thank you for asking that question. One thing I would say for the LNC, if there's a concern about malnutrition, see what the protein levels drawn. A pre-albumin, albumin are 2. Now the albumin is a late factor. The pre-albumin is the more current, it's a shorter and a more accurate assessment, a shorter time frame, and that would be one of the first thing I would say, look for the pre-albumin level. And different facility, different lab, different hospital settings have different lab norms. So be watchful of what the norm is, look for that norm that's related to that particular lab agency. And another for is the dehydration, look at the sodium level. High sodium levels indicate dehydration as a possibility, and also high potassium levels are also indicators of possible dehydration. Look at the urine color, the urinalysis, look at the results of it. And even within the facility, look to see whether or not there was assessments done for the urine, the color, the odor of the urine could be a possible sign, the problem, the color of it. And also, I would say, with if the person's incontinent, look to see whether or not there was how many diapers or incontinent pads was used, and whether or not the incontinence, with how many episodes were documented. And another possibility too, diarrhea is another possible for things that could lead to dehydration. Look to see whether or not that person was having diarrhea episodes, and if so, how many was recorded. Those are types of things I would say to look for to further evaluate and assess whether or not there's an issue with dehydration and malnutrition.
And can you comment on some of the terms that the healthcare providers might use in describing the appearance of the resident?
Oh, yes. Clinically, and looking at the medical records, I will look to some of the things would be, as far as assessing goes, assess whether or not they look for tinting of the skin, or some clinical signs, tinting of the skin, and also a dryness. That's another thing that can be looked for. Let me say, I had a case also where this was also during COVID time as well. This one was elderly. I think she was 80 years old. I can't remember the exact age now, but she had, the nurse documented, very dry, parched lips. And in addition to that, there was several episodes where she documented she fell for no apparent reason. She was sitting on the side of the bed and flopped over. There was two episodes of that documented. And for the dry lips, she documented she put an ointment on the lips. Nothing else was done. About 3 days later, of course, the resident was taken to the emergency room. Her urine, there was a picture, the attorney sent a picture of her urine. It was so dark. Look, it looked the color syrup. It was such a dark color. And that was unfortunate. Of course, she died. But it was the lack of the assessment and the lack of that nurse that assessed her. She just said dry lips. She did no further investigation as why her lips were so parched, there was no documentation of whether or not about, she was incontinent, of course, and she required feeding. The nursing system did chart 25% and 50%. There was a gradual decrease in her intake, but no one did anything about it. No one notified the physician that there was a change in this person's condition, a significant change. It was business as usual until on Monday morning after the weekend, the CNA they had taken care of previously said, what's wrong with her? Why is she not responding? She had become lethargic, just there. So then, and that's when they act, and it was too late.
Yeah, that is a different scenario, isn't it? There's one scenario of the CNA charting 100% when the resident is not taking in 100% of meals and fluids. And in this scenario, the resident is truly not taking in enough fluids and foods. And the CNA is accurately describing the lack of adequate intake, but the thought process, the reporting, the critical thinking piece is not there on behalf of the registered nurse who should be observing these records and looking for changes and patterns. That's even a harder case to defend if you were on the defense side on such a situation.
Yes, in that particular case, the attorney actually, the defending attorney did not fight. She saw it as a closed deal, and it settled immediately. There was no delay in settling that case at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was no defense. There was no defense. They had no defense.
Are there any other tips on malnutrition or dehydration to help LNCs evaluate cases that we should cover now?
Well, one thing that I feel is often overlooked in us reviewing medical records for dehydration and malnutrition is the nutritional assessment. When a patient is first, a resident is first admitted, a nutritionist always do a baseline assessment, assessing the caloric needs based upon the comorbidities this person has, assessing the fluid intake, and of course the weight is also taken into consideration. And that's one thing I will stress, to always look at that. Look for a monitoring of the weights. There should be initially, and the base, the requirement is to weigh weekly for at least a month. Because as I said earlier, a significant weight loss is greater than 5% in 1 month. And unless the weight is being monitored, there's no ability to determine that. And in addition to that, also look at what to see nasal charting for its meal intakes, what percentage of intake that person is consuming. Look for the intake and output, how much they took in for its fluids, how much was put out. And oftentimes there's incontinence, so of course there may not be a measured volume recorded, but the number of episodes of incontinent urine can be measured. And usually the CNAs were right, heavy, light, or the color. Also look for the color changes of the appearance of the urine. Is it now no longer light or strong color? Is it now dark brown or yellow? Look for the odor. Was anything charted that as in the records? Those are some of the things I would say to look for. And additionally, always look at the labs. As I said earlier, look at the labs to see what's being measured. And of course, as always, look at the disease process. What do the patient have? One that with dementia, there's oftentimes that person just forget they need help with eating. Was the person assessed for their ability to eat of their own? Another thing I'll always look for too, and sometimes it's overlooked as well, is the oral health. What was the condition of the mouth? Did they have broken teeth? Did they have poor fitting dentures? Was there an assessment for swallowing issues? Those type of things. Of course, if there's swallowing issues, that's another, did they refer them to speech? If there's a problem with their broken teeth or dentures, or to refer it to a dentist. This ongoing assessment that should be documented in those records is what's being done, what was assessed, and what type of follow-up was done. And always, always look at the care plan. What did the care plan say? What did MDS, the minimal data sheet, what was the assessment done? What kind of assessment was done? What did they assess the needs of that person to be? And then after doing that assessment, did they create a care plan for those problems and were they followed? All of those things in a nutshell, and that probably more that I might have overlooked, didn't remember or didn't say, but those are things I should say are basic. The basic things that whenever you review a chart for malnutrition issues or dehydration, to look at those things.
You picked up a lot of those key factors, Ethel. It really comes down to the legal nurse consultant looking at the details, the examination and analysis of the medical record forms the foundation for looking at nursing home cases as well as other cases.
Yes.
And this population that we're discussing, the frail elderly who live in our institutions are particularly at risk for a variety of things that can disturb their health or get them in trouble, and rather quickly too. That's another amazing aspect of thinking about the care of the elderly, is that a younger person with fewer comorbidities might be able to go longer with some of the problems that can bring an elder person down much more quickly.
Oh, yes, yes. And one factor too with that, Pat, with the malnutrition and dehydration could lead to bed sores. It's so that's no one single factor. That's a lot of possibilities. In addition to falls, there could be bed sores. So yes, there's malnutrition, dehydration is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. I know that our listeners are going to want to know how they can connect with you, Ethel. They might be in need of a nursing home expert, such as yourself. They may want to ask you questions. What would be the best way for them to connect with you?
My email is always good. I have an email address of info@ewheelslegalnurse.com. And of course, my office number is another means of doing so. That's 205-216-2875.
And Ethel is in Alabama, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so mind the time zone. Don't call her up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I'm probably up, but no.
And Ethel's last name is spelled with two L's. W-I-L-L-S, when she gives the email address. And Ethel's last name is spelled with two L's. It's W-I-L-L-S. So keep that in mind when you are contacting her through email. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, we'll put her email address right below the video. Thank you so much for sharing your information, Ethel, with us. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and getting the benefit of your expertise in terms of evaluating nursing home cases.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you again for having me.
And for you who's been paying attention, listening while you're walking your dog, sitting in your lawn chair on the beach at some future point, I'm recording this on February 1st, so you're probably not in a lawn chair on the beach today, unless you are in the very, very, very southern part of Florida. Right now it is 70 degrees in Fort Myers, but it is still a little bit too cool for us to be sitting on the beach. We like it in the 80s and 90s for that. And thank you for spending your time with us, and be sure to come back next week. We have a new guest, new topic, or you can click on down if you are listening to more than one show at a time. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, please give us a like, leave a comment, subscribe. Remember that Legal Nurse Podcast is now in its sixth year, and we have listeners in 87 countries. And we love to share knowledge with you to help stimulate you, motivate you, and open up the possibilities of what this exciting field can do for you. I'm Pat Iyer, and thank you for spending your time with me and with Ethel.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have with me Jenna Gaines, who is a doctorally prepared cardiac nurse practitioner. And we've been talking in her podcast about some of the nuances of diagnosis and treatment of MI and how a failure to diagnose or a delay in diagnosis can have significant impacts on the patient. Jenna, could you give our viewer or our listener just a couple of highlights of what we covered in your podcast?
Yeah, definitely. We covered a lot today. We discussed the definition of an MI, the diagnosis of an MI. We discussed the initial workup of an MI and what providers specifically should be investigating in the patient who presents to them with chest pain. We discussed the type of the acute coronary syndrome and the treatment for each of those. We discussed conditions that can mimic an MI and how this leads to delay in diagnosis of an MI or misdiagnosis of an MI. And finally, we discussed that atypical non-cardiac patient presentation that can lead to misdiagnosis of an MI.
As you can tell, we covered a lot in Jenna's podcast. Be sure to catch her show on Legal Nurse Podcast. You can get it directly from podcast.legalnursebusiness.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.